This meeting of the House Resources Committee will now come to order. It is now 1:01 p.m. Wednesday, February 4th, 2026, in Capitol Room 124. Members present are Representative Fields, Representative Colomb, Representative Hall, Representative Mears, Representative Prox, Representative Elam, Representative Sadler, Co-Chair Representative Dibert, and myself, Co-Chair Representative Freer. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business, and please take this time to silence your cell phones for the duration of the meeting. Thank you. I'd like to thank Cheryl Cole from Records and Renzo Moises from the Juno LIO for staffing the committee today. Today in House Resources, we are holding an introductory hearing on House Bill 271 from Representative Fields relating to royalties in the kitchen lights unit in Cook Inlet, and then hearing a related presentation from Hex Fury on their operations in Cook Inlet. We also have available for questions Ryan Fitzpatrick, commercial manager with the Division of Oil and Gas within the Department of Natural Resources. So first up, we'll bring House Bill 271 before the committee. This is the first hearing on this bill in House Resources. Representative Fields, please take the testifier table with your staff, Michael Naughty, and begin your presentation.
Thank you, co-chairs Burke and Freer and Dibert for the opportunity to present House Bill 271. This bill pertains to royalty rates for the kitchen lights unit in Cook Inlet, and I want to thank former representatives on this committee for introducing prior royalty relief bills so that we could start exploring the options in this policy area. What is the kitchen lights unit? Almost 84,000 acres in Cook Inlet. Three DNR combined three units in 2009 to form what's currently the kitchen lights unit. Fury owned and operated a single offshore platform. Here's a better image of where kitchen lights is relative to some Hillcorp units. More detail about where the well slots are, and this chart really shows why I'm introducing this bill. So when Hex purchased Fury, they were able to stabilize what had been a production decline. They also applied for royalty relief. This was basically during a time period in which the legislature was debating royalty relief. When DNR granted royalty relief, as you see from the green arrow, that did produce a very significant expansion of production. One of the reasons I'm introducing this bill is that DNR has looked at the economics of the unit and found that royalty relief is in the public interest. What does that mean to be in the public interest? Royalty relief is in the public interest in the sense that royalty relief is necessary to produce more natural gas economically. And DNR modeling indicates that we actually get more revenue with royalty relief because of the status quo anti-royalty level production simply would not occur in the context of overriding royalty interests that also add cost to production in this unit. Like I said, there are sort of two ways of looking at the public interest. One of them is gas supply. This chart from DNR shows that we are probably going to have some security of supply through 2031, and Hex's production out of the kitchen lights unit has been an essential element of that. This is a slide Representative Mears brought up, Chugach gas supply issues at a previous hearing. So I think when we look at the inlet, we have to think about both heating and electric generation. Kitchen lights is important in that broader context, looking beyond heating, but also for electric generation. Of course, as members know, CEA also has Beluga gas field assets that they develop in partnership with Hillcorp. People have been looking at gas production in Cook Inlet for a long time. This is just a little bit of history. One thing that I want to focus on is, and this is something that the previous members, like former Representative Rauscher, now Senator Rauscher, you know, I appreciate them introducing bills on royalty relief because I think it gave some of us an opportunity to learn more. One thing that's a little bit challenging when you look at Cook Inlet is They're simply different costs for different units based on overriding royalty interests. Now, I wish that the department had never approved those way back before the current commissioner designee or his predecessor or the predecessor before that or commissioners. But the fact is these overriding royalty interests or ORIs exist. And when you have a cumulative ORI plus royalty burden of 25%, as was the case in Kitchen Lights, you just aren't going to have production. So I think one of the things that was valuable about DNR's work is they investigated the economics and found that, yes, royalty relief is necessary for the Kitchen Lights unit to reach its productive potential. Now, that might not the same calculus or the same percentage royalty might not apply to other cook inlet units because they have different ORI burdens or they might not have ORI burdens. So if you're asking yourself, why did I introduce a bill for one unit? It is because this unit has the highest burden of overriding royalty interest in the inlet, and DNR has done the very extensive investigations to validate that royalty relief is necessary to get more production for the inlet. So I think as you look at this bill, there are a lot of policy options. Is indefinitely extending a 3% royalty rate the right way to incentivize production in this unit? That's a good question. Another good question is, well, goodness, if we're contemplating royalty relief for Kitchen Lights, should we be contemplating royalty relief for Cosmopolitan or maybe some of the units where Help Corp is producing? I think those are good questions too. I started with this unit because we have some really good data on this unit and we have a record of success. So I felt very comfortable defending royalty relief extension for this unit, and I think it's a good discussion. If we want more production out of Cook Inlet, what are some other steps we should contemplate? This is just a little bit of the background where DNR found that the applicant made a clear and convincing showing for royalty modification. This is DNR modeling that indicates DNR anticipated that we would have more production and more revenue with royalty relief. And I guess I would note in the past, I had not been supportive of broad royalty relief levels for all units in the absence of that economic modeling. I think it's really important to have the modeling. So some key takeaways, DNR did test many different scenarios to see what was an appropriate level of royalty relief for this unit. And again, concluded that royalty relief is in the best interest of the state because it prolongs the life of the Kitchen Lights unit. It produces additional royalties. I think most importantly for me, it increases really essential gas production that's essential and irreplaceable for South Central Alaska. And there are some positive jobs impacts, and Fury can talk more about that. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions. I think one more thing I want to note is, and members of the committee may already be aware of this, but right now there's only been one jackup rig in Cook Inlet. Hillcorp and Hex have had to share that jackup rig. So the way that royalty relief is structured now, with a gross value of, I think, $712 million, having a gross value essentially disincentivizes major capital investments, i.e. a jackup rig, by Hex or other companies. Because if a company makes that investment, their gross value threshold does not change. So they're essentially willingly accepting a lower profit margin within the construct of a royalty relief decision. So I think the way that my bill is structured, indefinitely extending a 3% royalty relief target, eliminates that disincentive. A company producing in this unit could invest, and if that prolonged the life of the field and they could earn more money, they're sort of encouraged to do it under my bill. The currently royalty relief structure issued by DNR within their existing statutory authority, I would argue, disincentivizes major capital investment. And that's probably not a good idea. Now, there are other ways other than my bill of at least allowing a company to break even with a major capital acquisition like a jackup rig. I think it would be beneficial to have another jackup rig in the inlet and deconstrain that exploratory potential, recognizing there are multiple explorers and producers in the inlet. And I think that pretty much covers all the major topics of the bill.
Representative Prox.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, Representative Fields, You said the DNR has the background documentation, et cetera, on this?
Correct.
I wouldn't even know where to look right now, but is that available, and could we include that so we have that on the record?
Yes. Let us find that for you, and we will include it on basis. And I have read it, Representative Prox. And I think when you read it, you will conclude it was very exhaustively researched.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Mears?
Thank you, through the chair. So I understand we've got a specific instance in front of us, but we also have tools within the DNR to look at royalty relief. I was really grateful for that process. I guess that was DNR went through that. Have you looked at all at what statutory changes might be necessary for DNR to be evaluating these or sideboards for evaluating the royalty relief, where I think it's far more appropriate to be making those decisions than in the Capitol?
Sure. Through the chair, you mean at the broaden agency authority, Representative Mears? So, yeah, one thing you could do is you could say for this unit and or others, DNR has the statutory authority to issue multi-year royalty relief that avoids that disincentive for major capital investment. I think one of the issues with royalty relief as it's currently structured is DNR can revisit it every year. The way the statute works, that doesn't provide a lot of stability across administrations, so I think an investor may be naturally hesitant, not knowing changes from administration to administration. And again, that's one of the reasons the bill, I think DNR did its homework. I support it. And I think there's a public interest in providing some predictability across administrations.
Okay, Representative Elam.
Thank you. I haven't seen that report yet, but thank you for bringing this up. I mean, Upper Cook Inlet is very important to a lot of folks, myself included. But I was curious if you had done any research into the elements, which maybe a little outside of the scope of this, but for oil, you know, Marathon and the refinery and getting Cook Inlet oil in particular is also really important to a lot of our communities too. And so I don't know if that DNR report has any of that information in it potentially. Again, I know this is all LNG, yeah. But
through the chair and doing the research for this bill, I was just focused on gas, given the sort of gas supply crisis. So I have not looked at what we should consider in terms of oil in mm-hmm. the context of royalty relief.
Okay. Thanks.
Representative Sadler, then Representative Klum.
Thank you. I appreciate the sponsor bringing the bill forward. I also want more production of natural gas from Cook Inlet. That's what my constituents use to keep their homes warm and their lights on. You know, the question anyone's going to have, and I think it's been asked, is if kitchen lights deserves a royalty relief throughout the life of production, why don't others? And maybe I want the perfect to be the enemy of good and say, why don't we have the entire, if the royalty relief provisions in 180 are not sufficient for a kitchen lights unit, the question would be, why not? Should we fix that? And so that's kind of problematic. But so I guess, do we know how long kitchen lights unit will operate and how long these royalty relief provisions are expected to last? And I'm sure the answer is depending on how many wells you drill, what the draw is and so forth, but some idea what the geology might support will give me some information as to how long of a royalty relief regime I would be willing to go for.
Just a reminder, we do have Ryan Fitzpatrick on the line as well with the Division of Oil and Gas.
Yeah, and I would thank you, Co-Chair Freer, and I would defer to either Mr. Fitzpatrick or the upcoming presentation on likely production timeframes. And good point, Representative Sadler. You know, maybe 10 years with a potential multi-year extension is a better way to structure it.
Representative Klum.
Thank you, Chair. Through the Chair, I just wanted to clarify something. Thank you for bringing this forward, by the way. So this keeps the royalty rate at 3% of each month of the gross value of production from the lease. Is that what is currently happening? Is that what the DNR commissioner did? Is the percentage change from what's happening right now?
Through the chair, I simply extended the same percentage that DNR had picked. Again, based on their economic analysis, okay. All the bill does for this unit is provide multi-year predictability to encourage ongoing investment.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Are there any other questions for committee members?
actually,
Representative Sadler.
And again, not to the sponsor, maybe, but if we have Mr. Fitzpatrick or anybody from DNR, I guess the question has to be brought out in the record. Why have the existing royalty relief mechanisms not been sufficient? Or I've heard that, yes, they exist in law, but they are long and arduous and don't recognize the need to act quickly. So I'd like to give DNR the opportunity to respond to that allegation.
Thank you, Representative Sadler. I think you also might get that answer in the next presentation. But if Mr. Fitzpatrick is on the line and can
take a stab,
and I can also take a stab at it, Co-Chair Freer. So, if you're a company, WeatherHex or another company, and you're going to say borrow money to procure, say, a jackup rig, and I think it would be logical for the lender to ask, well, how sure are you that you will continue to get this royalty relief, which we know because of the public data is necessary for the production to be economic. And part of my purpose here is to make it easier for those companies to attract capital by showing, yes, we have a 10-year window, we're going to make the investment, we're going to recoup it, we're going to earn profits. It's very predictable.
Thank you. Well, seeing no other questions, we'll take a brief, or were you going to... Hold on a second.
Up to you on whether you want to read through a sectional analysis or go straight to the next presentation. Thank you.
I think we might just go straight to the next presentation. We'll take a brief at ease while we switch presentations. We are back on record in House Resources. Mr. Slaughter, thank you for joining us at the table. Please begin your presentation.
Great. Thank you, Co-Chairs Freer and Co-Chair Dibert and committee members. For the record, my name is Mark Slaughter. I am the Chief Commercial Officer for HEX and Fury. Just a little bit of background for myself. I am born and raised in Fairbanks, lifelong Alaskan. I live in Anchorage with my wife, and we are lucky enough to have all four of our adult children living in Anchorage with our three grandchildren. So living in Alaska, we're very proud to be Alaskan and working for Alaska Company. just point of make sure that everyone can hear me since I have a soft voice. Okay. To be clear, HEX supports HB 271. HB 271 improves upon the positive decision that the Department of Natural Resources made in February 2025. The Kitchen Lights unit is a unique unit. It was formed in 2009 by bringing two other units that were in distress, the Kitchen and the Corsair units and the Northern Lights unit. It combined all three units into one large unit. HEX itself is the owner of Fury, and we will be rebranding the Fury name, and HEX and Fury will go away. So for the purposes of the presentation, I'll just refer to HEX, even though currently and legally Fury is the operator of the Kitchen Lights unit. But for simplicity's sake, I'll refer to it as HEX. So the Kitchen Lights unit is 84,000 acres. It's offshore. In the middle of the Cook Inlet. And we have one platform that produces natural gas. And we only produce natural gas. As of December 2025, we produced a little over 9% of the total Cook Inlet gas production. And we are the second largest operator in Cook Inlet. And then we additionally have been purchasing leases in the Cook Inlet State lease sales for some more additional offshore leases, which you can see that in the red or dark brown color off to the side. And those are additional prospective leases that we look to be doing some additional exploration on in the upcoming future. So how do we get gas to the Cook Inlet market? Well, beginning with the Allegra Lee platform off to the left on the side, that's the newest platform in Cook Inlet. It was set in 2015. It's also the smallest platform. The prior owners of Fury elected to build a small platform that had a limited number of well slots. It could only have 6 wells drilled from that platform. At this time, I'll get into this later, but we've improved upon that capacity of the platform. We produce gas. We send it through a 15-mile subsea pipeline where then it's processed onshore at our central processing facility in Nikiski. There, we treat the gas. We bring it up to utility-grade specifications where it goes into the greater Cook Inlet transmission system where it's sold to NSTAR, the Marathon Refinery, and we've sold in the past to Chugach Electric, Matanuska Electric, Homer Electric. Homer Electric was the first company that we sold gas to in 2015. So we have a long history. We have over 10 years of production at this point. This slide is kind of the basis for this bill as Representative Fields presented it. When Kitchen Lights went into production, you had the total royalty and overriding royalty was 25%. That's the combination of the green bar and the blue bars, green being the state's 12.5% share of royalties, and the blue bar is the 12.5% that the state, the Department of Natural Resources, approved the creation of. So that unit is unique in that it had 25% combination of royalty and overriding royalties. No other unit has had this burden placed on it, and this is one of the reasons why the predecessor company was unable to survive financially, because 25% of every dollar they earned went out the door before they could pay bills, before we pay employees, contractors, anything. With the department's decision last year, the royalty relief, the state took royalty relief their share down to 3%. So now the unit is operating at 15.5% total royalties, which is above the average for the inlet. You can see some units that are older units have just 12.5% because the state, that's a typical royalty burden for the state. Other units are higher, but those are, anytime you see the blue line, those are overriding royalties that the state approved the creation of, and those are private interest royalties. So the process, and you just heard it, it's an arduous process. This slide is intended to give you an idea how long it takes to go through the process working within the framework that the Department of Natural Resources has. We started the initial discussions in April of 2023. And in that, there is rightly so concerns by the department about the private overriding interests. They asked us to approach the private parties. We did so. We asked to either have them reduce voluntarily their share, or we attempted to buy them out. And unfortunately, we were not successful in that effort. And then the department advised us that we should seek a legislative process, go through the legislative process. And that, as you previously heard, was at the time Representative Rauscher's House Bill 223. And it did not pass out through the efforts because it was, say, in part because it was a wide Cook Inlet area-wide bill. It was not targeted just for this unit, and there were concerns. Does royalty relief work? Will it actually get more gas out of the ground, get more investment in Cook Inlet? So we re-engaged with the Department of Natural Resources and spent the summer working with the commercial section of the Oil and Gas Division, and they did extensive modeling. If you look at the royalty modification report that they issued, there was extreme amount of work that went into this. And I'll point out that this was the first royalty application within Cook Inlet that has occurred specifically for gas. So it was a new process for everyone involved. It's not something that they do frequently. There's been, they, in their best interest finding presentation, to LBNA in December. They have a table that shows the number of applications and whether or not they've been successful. We are the only ones that proved and demonstrated to the state that royalty modification would work, was necessary for this unit to extend the life of the unit. And during that period, while we worked with the Department of Natural Resources, we did drill wells in advance of receiving it. So we moved forward. We took the risk to drill a sidetrack well in the fall of 2024 before royalty relief had occurred. The department approved the royalty relief in February of 2025, and shortly thereafter, we were moving forward with using the jackup rig to drill that spring. And we also, at the same time, were going through the loan application process with ADA, where we secured a $50 million revolving line of credit to facilitate the additional investments necessary in Cook Inlet.
Before we proceed, I believe Representative Prox had a question.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, you say these are private royalty interests. Who is private?
Representative Prox, through the chair. They're private. Some are companies, some are individuals that may have done work for prior owners of the unit, that they were given the overriding royalty as a reward for doing work for the unit. But you have to go to the Department of Natural Resources creating this, and the department approves the creation of it. And the department states that they approve the initial creation, but then they don't track the – it's something that can be sold, can be traded. But these are entities. There's a few individuals, and then there's companies that own them.
Yeah, follow up, please. Well, I guess the question is, have they been involved, those entities – been involved with the discussion? At this point in my mind, it seems like an arbitrary decision against the current private royalty holders.
Representative Prox, through the chair, the privately held overriding royalties that total the 12.5%, that has not changed since their creation.
Okay.
Representative
Prox, I could just follow up just to get it clear in my mind. This is between HEX and the state of Alaska. We're not affecting somebody else.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Representative that Fields point. Has a, yeah.
And I was just going to offer through the chair to follow up with Representative Prox on the history of these particular ORIs and various ways the legislature looked at resolving them, which were unsuccessful, sort of hence leading us to this bill. Thank you.
Yeah. Sometime.
Representative Sadler.
Well, thank you. And through the chair, I'm not sure if Mr. Slaughter or the sponsor might be the person to answer. Maybe DNR is the right answer, but has the state ever denied a request to approve an overriding royalty interest? And if so, what was the criteria? And that probably does sound like a DNR question, but because anytime I hear ORI referenced, it's always in connection with your company.
Yeah. Representative Sadler, through the chair, yes, the state has, particularly for this unit, denied the attempt to create additional overriding royalty interests. There, I believe it was in 2010, there was an attempt to increase additional that would have taken the royalties over the private overriding royalties higher, and the state denied that.
Okay. Good to know there's a limit.
Seeing no further, have a follow-up?
On a different topic?
Representative Sadler.
So through the chair, Mr. Slaughter, I've seen that one of the objectionable elements of the traditional existing royalty reduction process is the requirement that you meet the plan of development requirements, which would mean jackup rig. Would a potential solution short of a statutory change be a modification of your plan of development to give you some more flexibility or some grace period on new drilling?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, the plan of development, we submit that every year to the department, and then they review it and approve it. Providing if we're able to have access to knowing we have access, then that provides us a greater line of sight. And as I'll explain, on additional sides, we have pursued additional jackup rig. We just were unsuccessful in securing that agreement.
So to follow up?
Follow up.
So I think I hear you saying that that you do see that as a potential solution, and you've have made that request, and it's not been approved. I'm not quite sure. You're saying that, yes, the plan development is approved every year, but could it be modified, which would achieve your ultimate goal here?
The HB 271 provides the long-term security or surety of us making investment decisions. Every year, having that plan of development does not provide us the long-term ability to make sure that we have the runway to invest within the unit to maximize the production from the unit.
Gotcha. So just feedback. So the existing process is a potential vector, but it's not does not provide the degree of reliability you need. Okay.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Okay. Seeing no further questions.
Okay. Thank you. So this is, again, of some more background of how during this process of securing royalty relief, what HEX has done. As I mentioned before, in 2024, while we were going through the process with royalty relief, we committed to using the Hilcorp jackup rig, and we drilled did a sidetrack well, which is the first new drill within the unit since 2018, and that brought gas on in the late fall of 2024. Even though we knew the economics weren't necessarily as we would desire, but we made the decision to move forward because gas was so urgently needed within for our customers. Subsequent to the decision from the department, we again renewed our contract with Hilcorp for the jackup rig and moved that rig on April 10th of last year. And from April 10th through the end of June, we were able to drill two new wells that brought on additional production. And that was in August. By October, we had increased our production rate to an average of 25,000 cubic feet per day. That was a five-year goal for the company, and we doubled our production from prior year, including the production from those two wells. Additionally, we've made additional investments to the platform by expanding the number of wells that can be drilled from that platform. We've expanded, we added additional well slots to the platform. We added a new production header system that will allow us to go from the current configuration of 12 wells. We can actually add two more wells to it if we can identify the another well slots we can add. Again, this is all in the efforts to increase production. We're making investments to the existing platform to bring more gas online. And the point I want to make with the adding the additional well slots is we effectively set a new platform without the time and cost of putting a new platform out there. We used the existing resources. Our engineering team identified a creative way to add capacity to what was a platform. People said, you can only drill six wells. What are you doing? Our teams figured out a way to double that. And that's allowed us to double production and then have a greater runway to increase additional production that's needed for the inlet.
Representative Sandler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Slaughter is the best person to ask this. I tried to get it from DNR before, but this is better. We're speaking a lot about the short-term effects. And I'm glad, you know, the future begins with a short step, but help us understand the underlying geological supply of gas and how long a permanent royalty relief might be employed. Basically, how long can a conventional light unit be expected to produce? I know that depends on how much you drill and so forth, but give us some idea what the time frame is.
From Representative Sadler through the chair, as you drill, you have the ability to add resources. You can see as you produce the gas, you're reducing your resources. But every time you drill, the geologists get more information, and you're able to expand out what the reach of where you think the gas is and where you believe the gas is. You start confirming that. So from a geologic perspective, every well we drill, we get more information, and we believe that certainly the time frame, you know, DNR showed that from their projections, this would take us out to 2032. We believe that we have a much longer runway, you know, out to the 2040s.
Let me follow just observation that we've heard from DNR in previous years. Yes, the same question. It's a complex basin. The geology is interesting, but the more you drill, the more data you have, and therefore the more you can identify. So although it seems counterproductive, you drill, you are depleting some resource that you know about. You might be identifying new ones. So this is kind of keeping the patient alive. It may get even better. Not patient, I mean. The more you drill, the more you produce, the more you may produce in the future. Good.
Okay. Thank you. So this slide really shows the crux of the discussion. That does royalty modification result in additional gas? Does it result in more investment, more production in the inlet? And the answer is yes. You can see the decline that the prior production from the prior ownership, what the field was looking like with the red line. Once the company was purchased by Hex, you can see an increase as new resources were looked at, new wells that had been previously shut in were brought back, and you can see a slower decline rate. But then once royalty relief had occurred, you see the immediate benefits of that. And you see the first spike was for the A1A sidetrack. Then the next large spikes are when we brought on the A5A and the A6 wells. Those wells are extremely important to the inlet. Combined, those two wells alone in the past 6 months have produced over 2.1 BCF of gas. So that's 2.1 BCF gas that could have been pulled from storage had we not drilled these wells. And if you look at what NSTAR presented to the RCA last week regarding this recent cold snap, that gas was critical for maintaining the supply to the inlet.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair, Commissioner Slaughter, the chart, look at the red box, the kind of doomsday scenario, the end of field life without Hex ownership. I've asked the question of pipeline operators, too. Is it fair to assume that production would actually continue down to zero-point production, or is there a point at which economically you could not produce gas that might exist? Is that red runway a fair, or is that just theoretical?
Well, Representative Sadler, through the chair, that is at that decline rate of those wells, but the wells will reach a point where they won't produce at a high enough pressure to lift either the water or be able to enter into the flow line. So instead of saying going all the way to zero, those wells might only produce, you know, you might have to stop producing at like 3,000 MCF a day or something.
Good. Thank you.
So particularly for how does HB 271 work? I mean, it is working, and it is improving upon the royalty relief. Is it working? And this HB 271 improves upon the department's decision. To prepare for 2026, the Hex team did look at buying a jackup rig. We engaged Fernley's Overseas AS as a rig broker. The team traveled to Singapore and Saudi Arabia looking at rigs that had been identified for purchase. We used Majuspec, a rig inspection company, to inspect the rigs, and we were preparing a tender for the purchase of a rig, and then the owner of the rig took it off the market and put it back into production, or said it took it off the market. The other rigs that we have identified that might work, again, are all overseas, and those rigs are in the 50 to $100 million cost for a rig. Thankfully, we were able to secure the third use of the Hilcorp's Spartan 151 jackup rig. We signed that contract in December of 2025, and we have that scheduled for the second half of the drilling season. And for the record, I want to be very clear, Hilcorp has been an excellent partner with the jackup rig. Their team is very professional. The efficiencies, the knowledge of that team has been excellent to work with. They have a very strong safety record, and there's been very little downtime with that rig. So it's been a key piece of our success for bringing additional gas on out of the kitchen lights unit. So the question, does royalty relief work? I think we've proved it does. What HB 271 does is it provides us the surety that we have when we make our long-term decisions to spend capital. We're a small company. We're the only 100% Alaskan-owned company in the oil and gas sector. You know, as identified our platform, you know, John renamed it after his granddaughter this summer. I think that should be an indication of his belief, his vision of where this company is going and the longevity of this company. So this bill will facilitate improving additional resources being produced for the Cook Inlet.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As the Chief Commercial Officer, you may be best positioned to answer this question. Do you have any potential investors you may be working with who might be willing to pull the trigger and make an investment decision should you obtain this royalty relief? Any prospects on the line?
As mentioned previously, we have our line of credit with ADA that we used the last year. We secured, you know, we borrowed $15 million from them as part of the process of drilling. Whether or not we have other investors, I mean, those are confidential discussions. But, you know, we are actively moving forward with a drilling program, you know, this year.
That's what I wanted to hear. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hall.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Through the co-chair, I'm curious, everything is relative. When you say that Hex Fury is a small company, what does small mean?
Representative Hall, through the chair, we are small in that we have approximately 20 full-time employees based in Alaska. When we are drilling, when Hillcorp has the jackup rig, there's over 100, 120 people out on our combined between the platform and some of them, there's overflow that stay on, that are on the jackup rig and then overflow to our platform. Our platform can hold, I believe, a 28 beds, I think is the count. Compare that to other producers in the inlet who have hundreds of wells and hundreds of employees. We are small, but we have demonstrated that an Alaska company, Alaskans can do the work and get more gas out of the inlet. And we think that's very important. And it's just, there's a unique nature to the Cook Inlet, and unique that the state doesn't have any other small Alaska owners. If you look at Oklahoma or Texas, there's a lot of independent small producers. You know, we have visions to grow the company, and we'd like to be a much larger company in the future. And royalty modification provides that ability for us to continue to grow.
Thank you.
Thank you. I've got Co-Chair Dibert, then Representative Klum.
Thank you, through the co-chair. Thank you so much, Mr. Slaughter, for your presentation. I am kind of going to go back to the expansion header that you had described and how you were able to overcome a challenge and have more wells drilled. That's fantastic. It's excellent. So for the teacher in me, you know, that's like STEM, that is innovation. And if we want to hire young Alaskans and have Alaskans go through challenges like this, I was wondering if your small company, would ever do like a STEM camp to like, you know, energize our youth, think outside of the box, think through challenges that the oil and gas companies, you know, need to think about, like expansion headers. You don't have to answer it now, but just something to think about. And thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Co-Chair Dibert. That's certainly a very good idea, and I'll point out we do interact with the Kenai Peninsula Technical College. We do sponsor a $10,000 scholarship to any graduating high school student on the Kenai Peninsula. As a shameless plug, right now you can apply for that. And we have been doing that for a number of years. And we think that's very important. And as part of, you know, John's ownership of the company is to give back to the communities and be involved in the communities. So we are very encouraged to have additional. We want local kids growing up to see that there's jobs on the Cook Inlet, that you could go home at night. You don't have to be on the slope for 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. That's one of the benefits of this field, which is the source of, you know, the original oil basin of the state, is right here in Cook Inlet. So, thank you.
I've got Representative Colomb, and then, yeah, Representative.
Okay, thank you, Chair, through the Chair. So I'm kind of curious about the Jacob Briggs. So I know that you're using Hillcorp's. and last session, we actually had a bill that offered a tax credit to bring Jacob Briggs up. So can you explain, so if let's say that sale had gone through, you guys would keep that busy? It sounds like you would be busy enough to actually purchase your own jackup rig. Is that something that you would share with others, or and is it holding you back to have to share it with Hillcorp?
Representative Colomb, through the chair, have the jackup rig, just round numbers, to move it was going to be in the $5 to $10 million just to move it with a heavy left vessel here. You want to have that rig operating for as long and as drilling as much for efficiencies of scale, but the window that you can really drill is limited because of Cook Inlet, because of the winter.
Okay.
So if we were to secure it, we would, you know, you'd be looking to try and drill as many wells as possible to minimize your cost. And then if there's other, excuse me, parties that had an interest in the rig, you could make that rig available, yes.
So follow up. So right now, do you feel like it's holding you back by not having one?
It limits the pace at which we can develop the field.
Okay.
And the priority is to get new gas on. We did provide DNR a plan of exploration for the unit. I believe it was an exploration. But, you know, the focus, we have said, is why drill an exploration well that may or may not be able to connect into the system when gas is needed and we can just drill from our platform. That's the need, is to get Cook Inlet gas being produced.
Yeah. I just wanted to comment. I went to go visit the platform. It's amazing, and thank you for the invite to do that. It really helped me see a lot of stuff. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Colomb. Representative Sadler.
Thank you. And to follow up on Representative Colomb's point, on your slide 8, if you just pop up one slide back, there's reference to folks that made trips to Singapore and Saudi to inspect for purchase jackup rigs. Should we conclude that you actually may be considering, you know, looking for one to buy? Mm-hmm. To do what?
At that time, yes, last fall, we were certainly preparing to buy a rig. Now that we have the rig with Hillcorp under contract, the number of well slots that we can drill with our own rig is now different. You know, we may have two, we may have three wells drilled by the end of this year. That affects our decision for a jackup rig.
Very good. If I follow up on a different topic, the language, and maybe this is a point for the sponsor, but I suspect you've worked with X to communicate. The findings say granting royalty modifications for certain kitchen light unit leases. That's the bottom of page 1, line 14. And then the actual guts of the bill on page 2, line 11. I'm sorry, the whole thing. 6 shall modify the leases. So my question to Mr. Slaughter is, are there any particular leases inside the unit that would be more, that would get more benefit from royalty relief? And basically, does the bill cover all leases in the unit?
The bill just covers the specific leases that that the DNR modified. They limited it to, instead of, I believe we have 30 leases, and I believe it's 6 that modification applied to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
So as this slide, I didn't really discuss, but Cook Inlet is a unique market. The Kitchen Lights unit is a unique unit. What this bill does is allow us to have a surety when we make our decisions of the immediate term. There's significant, as the committee is well aware of, other issues coming down the line that are unique and have not been before us. The Cook Inlet Basin as an oil basin is a challenge unit because the contractors have effectively left the unit. There's a lot fewer support contractors in the basin. We are having to send tools that we're using or equipment that we're using for this drilling season, upcoming drilling season in 2026. We have equipment that we are having to send to the North Slope to have worked on by our contractors and then ship it back to Cook Inlet because their facilities have been shut down in the inlet. So that is a significant change of where this basin used to be. And then we have the bullet just about the timing of the rig. We have dates where we expect to get the rig, but as the owner of the rig, you know, they need to do their work first. So that will affect it. And then depending on the weather, we have dates that we have to get the rig out from the unit back to shore. If it's an early winter, we need to get the rig back to shore because we don't want to have it, you know, get stuck out in the inlet. The positives will definitely have shown is royalty relief works, targeted royalty relief. As of right now, we have 6 wells in the unit. 50% of those wells have been drilled under royalty relief. That, I think, is a very good indicator of that this is working. The benefit we have with that rig under contract right now is that we're able to move forward and demonstrate there is gas in Cook Inlet. Kitchen Lights has the gas. We have shown a big increase in production. Hillcorp over at the Tionic platform has increased production by drilling. CEA and Hillcorp at the Beluga River unit has increased production by drilling. You just have to start drilling and you can find gas. If you look at USGS, the data is there. It supports that there's 19 TCF to be discovered in Cook Inlet. So it's not a depleted basin, it's just an underexplored basin. And then I'll wrap up. I have just 2 more slides. This one, we continue to provide this information because I think there's a huge misconception about the cost of gas in Cook Inlet, cost to the consumer. This is U.S. Energy Information Administration data. They get the information from the local gas utilities of each state, and they produce this report that's updated typically monthly, and it shows the price of gas at your home. Alaska is the 10th cheapest as of September at, I believe it was $15. $15.38 versus Texas is the 4th most expensive place for gas. And it's imperative to show this. This basically shows locally produced gas is the cheapest gas for consumers. This also is a benefit, demonstrates that NSTAR does an extremely good job of providing safe, reliable, low cost service to their customers. So it would be great. You hear about Henry Hub. This basin has been not associated with a Henry Hub pricing. It's unique in its market, and we're still benefiting at the consumer for the benefit of having locally produced gas.
Thank you. Representative Elam had a question, and then Representative Hall.
Thank you. I was just kind of looking at the cost there and, like, you know, as far as how we would look at that. I mean, would this make any kind of a difference at the price to the end users or to the customers? Because there's a variety of prices out there. Sorry, I'm not formulating my thoughts very well here, but this royalty relief, would this actually result in cheaper natural gas?
I will say it results in more natural gas. This market is unique in that the utilities typically want firm contracts with a set price. They do not like spot prices. These lower 48 typically trade on spot prices. They may have a basis of long-term or short and mid-term, but there's a lot more flexibility in the pricing versus you'll see the utilities seeking fixed price contracts. So I can't speculate what if it will or will not, but it will produce more gas for the market.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Hall, then Representative Brooks.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Through the Co-Chair, when it comes to the price of gas in Texas, is that price for local consumption, or is it export, or is it a mixture? And then for Alaska gas, is there a difference between the price that you're selling the gas and what Hilcorp is selling their gas for?
Representative Hall, through the Chair. The price in Texas, this is the residential price. So this is what they would pay, the consumer pays at their meter. And again, with this is the price that in Alaska the consumer pays at the meter. Regarding, is there a difference in price between Hex's price and what Hilcorp charges? Yes, there are differences in prices. And that data is you can get that data available from the Department of Revenue.
Follow up, Madam Co-Chair. Can we ask whoever's on with DNR what that price difference is?
Let me see if he's still here with us. Mr. Fitzpatrick, are you still on the line?
Yes, hello. This is Ryan Fitzpatrick, Commercial Manager from the Department of Natural Resources.
Thank you. Did you hear Representative Hall's question by chance?
I believe the question was, and please correct me if I'm wrong, the price difference between the contracts that Hex currently has for the sale of gas versus other producers in the inlet. That is not something that I have available immediately. Typically, the Department of Revenue publishes a weighted average cost of gas for the inlet, but that's weighted average across multiple sellers, so it doesn't necessarily break it out by seller. But the RCA, the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, approves the sales contracts between the gas sellers and the utilities, so that's the agency that typically has the record of those sales contracts.
Answer your question.
Thank you.
I've got in the queue Representative Prox.
Well, I think maybe just an observation. This is new information for me, which opens up a whole discussion about the whole Cook Inlet field and what the potential might be. But I kind of think that is a discussion for another time, but we should think about that.
Thank you, Representative Prox. Representative Dybert, or Co-Chair Dybert, I apologize.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Mr. Slaughter, this U.S. Energy Information Administration bubble on the slide, does that, for Alaska, is that like an average for the state? Does that include Fairbanks Natural Gas and Cook Inlet Natural Gas? Or like how would Fairbanksons find themselves? Thank you.
Representative Dybert, through the chair, yes. The utilities are required to submit this data. And so this would include NSTAR, IGU, and the other gas utility, I believe, up on the slope. So it's a blended price.
Okay, thank you. Are there any further questions? Seeing no further questions.
Okay. And this just, we're just, you know, want to acknowledge that it is not just HEX that gets this done, that this is a cooperative effort of from the governor all the way down to our employees, specifically, you know, our customers, NSTAR, Marathon, Chugach Electric, the Alaska legislature taking the time to investigate, to look at this, to make the effort to get more gas out of the inlet. We are only successful by having everybody working together to make this ability to get more gas out of the inlet. So I appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of HB 271, and we're happy to have any follow-up questions that you might have. Let us please know if we can help.
Thank you. I believe we have one final question from Representative Paul.
Thank you for your indulgence. Okay. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Through the Co-Chair, back on slide 9, you had mentioned that support contractors are leaving the Cook Inlet Basin. Why is that?
Frankly, there's just a less activity in the basin. I'm not sure if there's been a new oil well drilled in a number of years. There is limited number of producers. You can see that consolidation has occurred in the inlet. And frankly, like, we only have access to CISPRI boats to support us. I guess I should refer to it as a ARC now. They're renaming themselves. Mr. Hendricks is right now out of state looking at purchasing our own support supply vessel because there is a need for us to have more support services. It's just that the basin, over time, you have fewer and fewer parties exploring, looking for gas. So there's fewer support contractors, and the North Slope has been booming. So there's a lot more activity. That's where the jobs, where the work is. That's where they're going to migrate to.
Thank you.
Representative Souther?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is not for Mr. Slaughter. It's for the sponsors. Is that okay? Through the Chair, Representative Fields, on page 2 of the bill, starting line 9 through 11, there's a phrase, the royalty modification under the subsection may be terminated if the commissioner determines, the modification was assigned without approval of the commissioner. And so that's a bit interesting. So why would he do something or she do something that had not? Can you please help me understand, is that to prevent seconding, you know, transfer of this royalty modification? Just what's the origin of that language?
Through the chair, that specific language was not something I asked for from Ledge Legal, so I'm going to have to follow up Ledge Legal to understand why they put it in there.
Be good, yeah. I'm sure there's a good legal reason, but it just sounds like a little right hand doesn't know the left hand is approved.
Okay. Seeing no, was that, did you conclude your presentation?
Yes. Co-Chair Freer, yes, that concludes my presentation. Thank you very much for the opportunity to present.
Okay. Thank you. And seeing no further questions, are there any questions for the bill sponsor? Representative Klum?
Thank you, Chair. I just want to make a comment. So my first session here, we had the bill that was referenced by Representative Rauscher to give royalty relief to gas and Cook Inlet. I think it ended up being oil, too. It turned into a big scenario. But at the time, it was surprising how many of my colleagues were against that bill. They wanted the royalty. They didn't want to give up the money, but we weren't giving up any money because there was nothing happening. And so I just appreciate Rep. Fields bringing this forward because it's obvious that not only do we need the gas, but the royalty relief works. I'm interested in getting it broadened. I think this is an important bill. The kitchen lights unit's important. But it's just interesting to me because these are the discussions we had 3 years ago, that we needed more gas. Utilities were clear that we needed more gas. And we tried to give the royalty relief. And there were several iterations of what relief. It went from 0 to 5, I think, or 0 to 3, kind of back and forth. But I hope, you know, with the information presented for the bill, what the work that DNR's done, what HEX is doing, that it's pretty obvious that this helps keep our constituents' houses warm and their lights on. So thank you, Rep. Fields.
Thank you, Representative Coulomb. Representative Fields?
Yes. Through the chair, I was just going to let Representative Coulomb know. I think that's a good suggestion. I'll do a little more research about sort of options if you wanted to look beyond the kitchen lights unit, recognizing the different royalty plus tax burdens across the different units, how we might address that. Thank you.
Representative Mears?
Thank you, through the chair. To Rep. Coulomb, I think we're going to discussion portion here. I think there's a difference between support of royalty relief and how the decision, who makes the decisions with what. The process that DNR went through to come to the conclusion for royalty relief is far deeper than we've got the ability to do here in committee. And, you know, maybe they go further, but maybe they don't go as far as we would with legislation. But I'm more thoughtful about that process and being able to evaluate the information. And I'm grateful that DNR has got the ability. They've got the statutory, you know, authority and the ability to do that work. And I think it serves us best in the long run to make sure that the department has got the authority and the tools they need to be able to do that more in-depth analysis. They'll also be able to see things that are further down the road in a different way than we can here.
Seeing no further questions or comments for the bill sponsor, I'm going to... that completes the agenda. we'll now set this bill aside. That completes the agenda for our House Resources Committee meeting today. Our next House Resources Committee meeting will be Monday, February 9, 2026 at 1 p.m. The agenda for that meeting will be noticed tomorrow by 4 p.m. Time now is 2:07 p.m., and this hearing of the House Resources Committee is now adjourned.